This is Midnight Alchemy with your host Jason Allen on the Left Coast Media Network. And now here's Jason.
Thank you, Al, my AI overlord. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you are. This is Midnight Alchemy, and I am Jason Allen. Hello, everybody. It is great to be back for another exciting episode. This is jam-packed with all sorts of news and goodies. Tonight, we got psychic extraordinaire Alexis Donkin on with us, and it is going to be super fantabulous. All right, we got some big news here for you. I'm excited as a schoolboy. We have our first live streaming event next Tuesday, Halloween night. Our first live streaming event, Halloween night. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Again, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. We got all sorts of cool stuff for you. We got special guests. We've got stories. We've got ghost stories. We're going to have live interactive with all of you. And I'm quite looking forward to this. It is, you just got to see it. It's going to be, like I said, super fantabulous. All right, folks, Alexis Donkin, psychic, right now. Hey, we are here with psychic Alexis Donkin. I am excited because I love to know all the different people with abilities, exactly, you know, what they see, hear, and feel, because each one has a story, each one, you know, is individual. So, Alexis, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
You know, I am peachy keen. It is a Friday, and everything is good.
So that's excellent.
Yeah. So, hey, tell us a little bit more about Alexis. You know, I guess first question out of the chute is, you know, when did you first realize that you had abilities, and how did you adjust to it? Because I imagine that's got to be quite an adjustment.
Well, so for as long as I can remember, I've had psychic experiences. So I would say that I was born with them. But as far as acknowledging that that's what they were, that that's what was going on, it took me some time. I have two parents that are ordained ministers. So that kind of complicates things, right? Because it's not exactly something that you can just like whip out and be like, hey, can I talk to you about this? I'm kind of curious.
Right. Hey, mom and dad, can I borrow your car keys? And oh, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But here's kind of the interesting thing. Like, it's sort of, that's sort of a family business. Like, I have a lot of clergy and like missionaries and stuff in my family on both sides. Yeah. So I have to say, you know, I think it was probably because of that inherited connection, although we might not have been able to label it as such for various reasons. You know, there wasn't space for that. So, you know, most kids that are psychic, they have an experience around the age of 7 where they have some kind of interaction with an ascended master or being that's typical for their tradition, you know, their cultural upbringing. So, like a lot of kids who grew up with a Christian tradition, I saw Jesus, you know, that was like, okay. Yeah. And I, as a kid, I was like, this is real. And also I'm not going to tell anyone that this happened. but then, you know, it wasn't until I was in my 30s, my mid 30s, where I really was able to be like, okay, you know, things just kind of blew up and the doors open. I couldn't ignore things anymore. So, you know, and that happened because, interestingly, I was working on an interfaith devotional. And so I was reading all these texts from these different traditions, and I was kind of experiencing this meditative state for like days on end. Yeah. And my guides were just like, okay, here we go. It's time. You can't ignore this anymore.
Knocking on your
Alexa. Yeah. So.
Okay. Hey, talk to us about the Ascended Masters. Who are they? And really, for people who are, you know, not really well versed in it, what their mission is.
I'll be honest, I don't use a lot of the jargon that a lot of psychics use. I say that because probably a lot of your listeners have maybe some kind of reference points, and that's like the best phrase to describe who these beings are. So when I use that phrase, if I'm saying Ascended Masters, I'm talking about someone who was alive on Earth and did a lot of the spiritual work while they were on Earth. And then in spirit, they act as a guide or a teacher for people who are, I'm going to say, deeply connected. you know, people that have some kind of spiritual psychic abilities, they may connect with Ascended Masters. They're one type of guide or being that people might connect with.
Yeah.
So
is it usually somebody like in the former, you know, in the corporeal life, like a shaman or
A shaman could fit in that. You know, a bodhisattva could fit in that, you know, someone who's achieved enlightenment on the Buddhist path. You could talk about a yogi. You could talk about a guru. You know, there's a lot of different types of people. You know, a saint could also, from different traditions, whether they're, you know, Jewish or whatever, or they could also be someone who's a little less attached to a specific religious tradition. You know, it doesn't have to be like that, but a lot of people kind of gravitate towards those labels.
Right. As you were growing up, and especially within your household and the dynamics of that, what did they think, and how did it change your outlook, your philosophy, your reality of religion?
So my parents are pretty open-minded. My mom actually, the last position she held was actually at a hospice. And so she basically worked like a death doula. Yeah. And so she would see and experience things that you can't explain all the time, you know, and she would talk a lot about the mysteries of what happens after death. And so she was, you know, she's always been a little more experiential with her faith in an active way. You know, she's Reiki certified, you know, that kind of stuff. My dad's a little more grounded. I would say maybe in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
You know, both of them are academically trained, and both of them, you know, are critical thinkers. And I also, you know, that's another thing. I also am academically trained. You know, I have a master's in global and international studies. So it's not like, we didn't ask questions and incorporate skepticism into our conversations. Like it was very common for us to talk about religion and politics at the dinner table, which I know is not typical for a lot of people. Yeah. And we would get into, you know, animated conversations, and that was safe and good for us to do so. Yeah. So, you know, on the one hand, like, did I bring up some of these experiences that I had? Sometimes, sure. And you know, when my abilities really were like, yeah, no, we can't ignore this anymore. I did, you know, I did tell them, more in more details, you know, if a recently deceased person came to me and requested a message be, you know, given to someone like in the community, sometimes I'd be like, you know, I think it would be better if you said it than if I say it. Right. And so I mean, there has been some of those things. I mean, it's definitely been easier to do what I do since they've retired. I'm not gonna lie. I feel less pressure since they retired. Sure. Because, you know, something that a lot of people don't necessarily realize is that pastors' families are political. You know, we basically function like a political family. You know, people have expectations for who you are, what you do. You know, you are a representative at all times. You may find people connect, you know, they'll reach out to you and they treat you like an extension of your, you know, your parents. So it yeah. could be a little awkward.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. You know, when I told my family that I was going to become a priest and enter seminary, right? My father has, I mean, a great guy. I mean, salt of the earth guy. He has a certain look he gives, and I'll give you the look. He takes one of his eyebrows and he goes,
yeah.
Yeah, he looks at you like,
are you sure about that? Right?
Yeah, my Hellraiser son, who, you know, couldn't have been more of a 180, decides he wants to. I mean, he gave me that enough when I told him I was going to college. He, former judge, legal advisor, very,
you know, straight and narrow. Yeah.
Here's my son, you know. Who really didn't apply himself in high school, you know. Anyways, but yet, so I completely understand.
Yeah,
and I'm sure everyone does. I mean, they have their own dynamic, but I'm sure there's a lot of people right now when they hear, not right now, but when they hear this, they're gonna do the bobblehead.
Yep.
You know? Oh yeah. That, you know. But how did it affect your preconception? Well, you know, you had it since seven, so but
I mean,
how did it affect your vision of especially organized religion?
Well, yeah, I would say that religion is like it's a code of ethics with a cultural jacket. You know, it speaks to a specific place and time, and to that people, it makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And within that, mm-hmm. there are universals. There are things that are always applicable and always human. And there's a reason why they show up in all of the traditions. For example, the concept of the golden rule, you know, treat others as you wish to be treated, love others as you love yourself. It shows up in a lot of different ways. It's phrased, you know, the words are a little bit different, but it's always the same. Yeah. And it's always there. And yeah. there's a reason.
Yeah, to me, it's always, thou shalt not be a douchebag. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. and you know, so I have always needed to be connected to spirit, even before I was clearly saying, like, yes, I'm psychic. If I had a dark night of the soul, it was when I felt disconnected from divinity. When I felt disconnected from spirit, then I felt completely lost and adrift. And so for me, I had to go through this deep kind of, I'm going to say like a separation and reconnection, where I had to question things at a deep level. And I really felt like I was walking through the void. And in that, I had to, you know, you have to kind of look at all of the different dogmatic pieces of your faith tradition. You know, if you're raised in a tradition, it can be really hard because that's something that you identify with really strongly when you're growing up. And then you get to this point and you're like, well, I don't really feel like that fits anymore. You know, the jacket's too tight. It doesn't, my arms are too long. You know, it just doesn't fit here. Right. And then you have to take it off and then you have to figure out, well, what am I going to put on? And sometimes there isn't one and you have to make it yourself. And that's really tricky because you need to make sure you have all the pieces.
Right.
And you might not.
Right. Yeah. When I was getting ready for seminary there, I had one of those dark night of the souls, you know, what sometimes people refer to as, you know, the come to Jesus moment, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And mine manifested in a dream. I was running away from something and you could feel it behind you. And I remember I was getting to the edge of this road and there was nothing but an abyss, right? Nothing. Mm-hmm. And I get to the end and I basically say to God, right? I can't go any further. I'm done, you know. Whatever's coming behind me, I can't, you know, whatever. And in the dream, I heard this very quiet, still voice, right? And the voice said, do you have as little faith to believe is that I would leave you alone? You know, and then, of course, I woke up blubbering like a baby, you know.
Yeah.
You know, doing all that. But, and, you know, I questioned later on, obviously, I left the Catholic, the priest role because, you know, I met the wife. And you can't do that, you know.
Yep.
So, later in life here, I've also had that, the crossroads, mm-hmm. you know, what do I believe? What do I stand for?
Yeah.
What's going to happen? All that stuff when you hit middle age, although I don't look anything above 21, but I'm kidding. But the crossroads, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, have had that no matter what age it is. What do you tell people about that? I mean, I know it's an intensely personal thing for everyone, right? It's just I'll since I have a show, I'll blab, you know, I'm an open book.
I mean, you know, when you, I think this is one of those things where some people kind of avoid it. And they don't want to think about it. Either they don't want to think about it because they've been told they're not supposed to question.
Right.
Or, you know, it could be dangerous for them in that they lose their identity. And right. That's very scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the other hand, like maybe they've just never thought about it before ever. You know, they've never questioned, they've never wondered about this because maybe they, you know, haven't been raised in a tradition and it just has never come up. They never thought about it before.
Yeah.
So when you get to that point where you're like, well, I think that there's something else out there, but I don't believe what my tradition says, that's when I'm like, well, what do you believe? You know, what are the things that speak to you? What do you want with your spiritual journey? You know, do you need a spiritual community? I would say that spiritual community is really helpful and wonderful, even if you don't check all the boxes. Like, I'll be honest, I go to a church right now. Mm-hmm. I don't like the worship service.
Yeah.
I go there because my friend is the pastor, and she has very similar beliefs to myself. And my kids like it. Mm-hmm. And the people, it's very progressive. It's very open. You could really believe whatever you want. The point is just to show up and be loving to one another. So, you know, if you are just looking for a spiritual community, like, you may be able to find that even if you don't check all the boxes, and it may still be a safe space for you. But like, if somebody came to me and had questions around that, I would start asking them, okay, like, what do you believe? What do you want your practice to look like? And then I can basically point you to, like, what tradition do you want? You know, like, what kind of practices do you want? Like, maybe, you know, paganism is great for you. Maybe you want to pursue Wiccanism. Like, maybe you should check out Hinduism, you know, like, it just kind of depends on where people are and what speaks to them. However, I would say that the people who are the furthest along in the journey, in the walk, they end up coming to the same conclusions no matter what the tradition or what the walk. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, like, the mystics, which are across the world, these are people who are on their ascended master path, they all sound very similar. Mm. I mean, you know, there's communities where they gather and they are not, you know, they're interfaith communities. They're across different faith traditions and things. The things that they're saying sound an awful lot alike. And there's a reason.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter at a certain point. You get to a certain level and it just kind of, those things kind of fall away. So.
Right. The semantics are different, but the message is somewhat still the same. I totally get that. And I have been emailed a bit by some, you know, a few people that said, you know, when I've had some spiritual guests on, I get the proverbial, you know, where do I go from here? And I'm like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not an ascended master, nor do I play one on TV. So all I say is, listen, find those who you think and get along with may have some information, because, you know, one thing will lead you to another, to another, to another. You'll get on your way, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a walk.
Yeah. Is there a wrong walk? I mean, is there a wrong road that you go down? Or is it because, you know, people have that in their orthodoxy, at least the three Abrahamic religions.
Yeah.
You're going to hell, you know.
Well, so, and this has come up a lot actually in the last couple of weeks because of some of the stuff that's been happening politically across the world.
Yeah.
You know, one of my, I would say that people can lose their humanity, you know, when we lose our humanity in this life.
Yeah.
If we continue to make those choices, we've lost our humanity after.
Right, right.
And it's a choice. It's not like, you know, we're not talking about a fire and brimstone kind of thing. I mean, you know, hell and heaven are right now.
Yeah,
you
know, okay.
You can exist in heaven now, or you could exist in hell right now. This is not something that's like a place. It's a state of being.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, how do you maintain your humanity? You know, you see other people as humans and you are kind to them. You know, you treat them the way that you want to be treated.
Thou shalt not be a douchebag.
Exactly. That's exactly the thing. That's the whole thing. You know, you're loving and caring to people. Does that mean that, you know, like, I'm not saying necessarily that there isn't tough love, but that there's definitely like a way of holding space for people and keeping your humanity. You know, you're not committing violence against other people. You're helping to make sure that they have basic rights. You're protecting them. You're showing them mercy. You're helping to restore justice. I mean, these are a lot of the principles that you would see across traditions and philosophies over the course of human history. They're not rocket science. They're not out there crazy things.
Yes.
They're very grounded and they have very specific things for you to do. The only problem is people get confused because you have to look at a context.
Yes.
As opposed to having a prescribed thing like, okay, I'm not going to eat bacon. Sure, fine. Don't eat bacon if you don't want to eat bacon. Nobody's pushing bacon on you.
Yeah.
However, when you are encountering someone who's struggling to walk to the counter at the doctor's office, do you get up and offer your seat?
Mm.
Do you help them to sit down?
Yeah.
Do you wait patiently for the person in front of you at the cash register as they're trying to get all their stuff together? Or do you like tap your foot on the floor and like grumble?
Grumble.
You know, I mean, like nobody's perfect. And of course, you know, you're going to have those moments where you're not perfect. However, how often are you showing love? How often are you showing kindness? How often are you doing those things? So I would say, yes, that's the right path. But what that looks like for each person is going to be radically different.
Right.
And that's okay.
Right.
You know, and you just do the best you can.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. I know I've taken kind of at the start here, a more of a kind of religious overtone. I don't mean to do that per se.
Totally fine.
It affects everybody.
It does.
Know, and people got to make sense of how they view their orthodoxy versus
totally.
Their reality. So
that's
why I bring it up. It's not me. It's for people. It's for people. Anyway.
Here's another thing. Like, I would say that your beliefs, this is my experience, your beliefs and your expectations also shape your interaction with spirit.
Oh,
so okay. If you form follows function. So that's why you get so many different, you know, near death experiences. People say, oh, this is how spirit is. And I'm like, for you.
Right.
For you it is. Yeah. but for me it's different, you know. Mm-hmm. So you may find that as you're walking through spirit, you'll see one thing and somebody else will see something radically different. The substance that's underlying that will be the same.
Yeah.
But how it presents is different because that's how you need it to present when you're experiencing it, because that's how you can receive it.
Right.
So it's good to talk about these kinds of cultural things and these religious understandings, because that's all underlying how we experience some of this, you know, wild and crazy spiritual realm.
Right. Oh, most definitely. When you were a wee lass, the first, like, maybe a spirit, someone who's passed on, however, you know, the nomenclature you want to use.
Sure.
How did you handle that? I mean, here's only to believe, but something is right there.
When, so growing up, I lived in a house that was built in the 20s, maybe earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There was definitely something in the house. It was not a problem, but it was definitely like, I didn't know, I was uncomfortable with it. Like, I was like, there's something here. Like, I'm going to run, like, I'm not going to be in the dark by myself and run up the steps. And it had like specific places where it would be.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like a little bit of like a, you know, at the time I was just like, maybe I'm just imagining it, but I'm like, I really feel like there's something here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my godmother passed of breast cancer when I was still rather young, and she is the first person that really came to me on a regular basis to talk with me. And actually, I've collected women. I have three mothers that are with me: my husband's grandmother, my grandmother who just passed about a year ago, and then my godmother. And the three of them have been with me as they've passed over. They will come and offer comfort, protection, give me advice, different things. I had my appendix removed in February, and they came and they sat with me in the hospital, and they just like poured light on me, and it was just like this really lovely thing. And so that's, those are not ascended masters. Those are people that I have direct connection with, but that's a very common, that would be a very common thing for someone to have those kinds of people who kind of fill a certain role for you both in life and in death.
Is that because they're in people's lives, there are times when they just feel that sense of calm, even if they're totally agitated 1 second before. It's just, is that possibly what it is? Maybe,
I mean, it
hey,
can be.
yeah.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, like sometimes we have like we go into like a default mode. Thank goodness for like biological instinct. Lets us get through emergencies sometimes. However, there's also a spiritual aspect, and there can also be, when you're in the middle of something, I would say you can tell the difference because it literally feels different in your body. When spirit connects, you feel it in your physical body, and different people will experience that differently, and how you experience it is a reflection of what is involved. Like a very common thing, which a lot of people talk about, is you get the shivers. Your the hairs on the back of your neck stand on end. Like that's a very typical thing. You get goosebumps because you feel, a lot of times if I have like a channeled message for someone, I'll speak the words like because I know that I'm supposed to say them, and then people get goosebumps, and I'm like, yep, well, that's why. Because it's not me. It's definitely not me.
How many times have you channeled? I imagine, I mean, do you get a waiting line on you?
I
It's
don't
like
really.
counselor, it's like your
I
DMV.
mean, I
Ding.
would say, like, I use that word, but I would say it's a claircognizance. So it's clear knowing. So it's like I can't even explain how it works because it's one of those things that's tricky. It just you just feel like you have to say this thing, and it just kind of pours out of you. And when it happens, I mean, I wouldn't say that that's the typical way that I interact with spirit. I mean, it could happen when I'm having, it happens when I'm talking with clients. Sometimes it happens on interviews like this, depending on what's going on. And I would say more frequently, I have clairvoyant and clairaudient. So that's clear seeing and clear hearing. That's how I typically do readings. If I'm doing like a message from spirit, it's almost like a mini lucid dream or a movie. Or if I'm doing like a heart center vision, that's a similar thing, but it's one is coming from out there, one is coming from the client themselves. So those, it's very, I mean, it really is incredibly detailed, just like a movie. And there may also be clairsentient pieces where there's clear feeling. So I might have like
Empath,
little
right?
emotions or tactile feelings, sensations.
Is that what they call empath, the feeling part?
Yes. So some people would separate those, but I think that's, can I say this bullshit?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay, I kind of think that's bullshit to separate them. In different circles, people will say use empath to mean different things. For rock and roll, though, let's just say that it's clairsentient. Like, I don't separate clairsentience and empath stuff, empathic abilities, because it's about feeling. So I kind of include feelings both in a tactile way, but also feelings as in your heart. So.
Excellent. You mentioned a phrase that instantly my antenna, the heart. Would you say a heart?
Heart center vision.
Yes. Thank you. Explain what that is.
So, when I, so one of the things that I've offered for clients since I began doing psychic work is I would look at a client's energy body. An energy body, we're talking about like the chakra system, or you can say energy centers. And
The aura, is that right?
well,
Or different?
it's a little different. It would be like so there's different centers of spiritual energy, and they are connected to different physical parts of your body as well as spiritual parts of you. So you the main center there's centers all over your body. This is how, I mean, if you're talking about meridians and acupressure or acupuncture, those are kind of connected to a similar way of understanding. If you're talking about yogic work and breath work and those kinds of things, they would be talking about chakras, again, energy centers. Pranic healing and Reiki also use these. The typical seven, it starts at the root, which is at your tailbone. Then you have the reproductive area, the sacral. This is like creative. Then you have the solar plexus, which is like the inner child, and your gut.
The
And
gut
then you
feeling,
have,
yes.
that's a great one. It's really fun, actually, because it's also play. And then you have the heart, which is really, it connects the lower centers to the upper centers. And it's literally when somebody talks about centering yourself, that's the place, right? This is also the place that's the seat of empathic abilities. It connects to the earth, it connects to nature. It also is all your feelings, and the heart organ itself holds memories. I mean, they say that even if you transplant a heart to someone else, they may take on some of the characteristics of the person whose heart it originally came from. So, what I do when I look at the heart is I'm looking to see how that person is experiencing their present moment. And each center, when I kind of dive into it, it's like a little universe. It's like a world. And it reflects what would happen in that center. So a heart would typically be a forest. There's usually water, which is symbolic of an emotional state. The nature of the forest, what happens in the forest, will show me if someone is dealing with some kind of trauma, some kind of pain, some kind of difficulty with their circulatory system. I could see that. They may be trying to shelter themselves. The imagery is, it's a wide variety of things. I've had clients that had beautiful, elaborate shelters in their hearts. Some people have had temples. Sometimes there's a massive waterfall. I mean, it's like you just, and all of those things mean different things. And so, I'll talk about what the symbolism is for each of those things, and we interpret them because there's collective meanings for the symbols. These are Jungian concepts, like a lot deep psychology. And then there's personal symbols. If we're in a specific forest, it's going to read very different if it's Southern California chaparral versus the Pacific Northwest
Right.
versus the taiga in,
Yeah.
Northern Europe
Black
versus a
forest.
rainforest. It's what does that mean for that person? Because there's a reason why it's showing up that way. How it feels, what's involved. So, it's a very powerful type of vision, and it's really helpful for people getting clarity about the answers that they already have in themselves, but they haven't yet accessed.
Do you find that that's a significant part of what you do? Because people get that stuff and they don't know how to process or really, because every human wants to find a definition for stuff. They want we are lovely at finding labels for things, right?
We sure are.
So, is that a significant portion of what you do, is trying to make sense of, to them at least, what the hell is going on, you know?
I would say most people, when they're coming to me, it's kind of what you'd expect, is people are having questions about, should I have a baby? Should I move? Should I switch jobs? Is my mom looking down on me, from heaven? Is, what do I do? Like, what do I do? Like, how do I? Or I have a lot of clients come to me when they're, I have these abilities opening up. What do I do now? How do I deal with this? So that's a very, very common for me, is to have, I would say, baby psychics coming to me.
First step, baby steps, people, baby steps. In your work, and I gotta ask this question. I'm
Sure.
sure you've gotten a lot, but in your work, has anyone says, "Hey, Alexis, can you tell me the lottery numbers?" You know, or what's gonna happen on this date? You know, or
Oh my gosh.
what?
So, I know that there are some people who do this work and they are comfortable making predictions about the future. I am not one of those people, because we all have so much control over reality. Each person, every choice that we're making is changing reality. Just
Very
by
true.
existing, we're changing reality.
Yeah.
So, yes, I know, I have known things that were going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, I don't tell them.
Right. I can
Because
understand that.
it's not helpful, because
Yeah.
then it changes what you
Yeah.
do.
Yeah.
And the whole point is not to know. Otherwise, we'd come here and we'd be omnipotent, and there's no point. The
Right.
whole point is for you to make the choices. The whole point is to decide what you're going to do.
Right.
And you learn by making those decisions and by making those choices. And so, yeah, you don't have all of the answers. And when you come to me, I'm not going to tell you, I would never, I mean, even if that was like within my realm, I would never tell people lottery numbers, because what's the point?
No, I'm not asking. I'm not asking.
I know you're not. I know you're good. But the point is, I've had people come with like heartbreaking, difficult decisions, and I know what's going to happen. And I've had to give them what they needed, not what they wanted. And 'cause I even like sometimes I even have that conversation with spirit. I have my guides, and I are like, we're very close. And I'll be like, I know that she's gonna have a miscarriage.
Right.
Do I
How do you
tell her? I
relate that,
can't
man? Oh
tell
my
her. I
gosh.
can't tell her that. I don't, I'm not gonna tell her that. 'Cause what use does that do? That's no good,
Right.
So I give them what they need, and then that's all. you know, I just let them do what they need to do. So yeah, I mean, it's rough, it's hard. And I, you know, and then I have like other people who come to me with, you know, someone's passed. The hardest is like suicides.
Oh man.
And it's like, you know, that there's such pain for the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the most important thing for me to do is to give people what they need so they can continue to walk.
Right.
Now.
Right.
Because that's the whole point. It's really not that long that we're here.
No,
you know, we're really not here very long at all. And as far as spirit's concerned, it's just like it's a snap of the fingers. It's not even separation is an illusion. Right. So, you know, just enjoy what you can here and now as best as you can, because that's the point. You know, be yourself here and now.
Yeah.
Enjoy what is delightful about now. You know, enjoy the pie. Like,
right.
Enjoy the sunsets. Enjoy the feeling of the breeze in the afternoon. You know, drink your cold lemonade. Like,
stop and smell the roses.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. You know, so do that. You know, live, enjoy the body, you know. Be intimate with your partner, like have fun with your friends, go, you know, all those things, like that's the point. And so it's my hope that no matter what someone comes to me about, that they leave a session or a time with me feeling like, you know, that they're affirmed and that they have what they need and they feel supported and loved and cared for, and like that, yes, like this is good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Cause you know, I've been in a couple conversations, well, more than a couple, where, you know, they bring up, you know, what's the meaning of life? You know, what is this? And I mean, all I can tell them is, you know, meaning of life. I'm like, life. You know, experiencing everything, the good, the bad, totally. And the ugly, and the whole human experience, right?
Yeah, totally.
That you're a banker or a lawyer or whatever thing is immaterial. It's what you do in the world to make your living or whatever, but it's not who you are. It, you know, what defines you, you know? I mean, are you that wrapped up in owning a 7-Eleven, or are you, you know, trying to ask these questions that everyone needs to ask, because only through asking can we grow, right? Anyway, that was a Jason Allen Midnight Alchemy soapbox moment brought to you by now do we only get one run through, you know, because a lot of religions reincarnation, heck, even the very early church had some form of you know, another go around, and that's always intrigued me. Do we get the chance to make it right no matter how many times, you know, we have to go on the Ferris wheel?
Well, I mean, from what I've seen and experienced, yes. However, you only get this version once.
Okay.
So you know, because this is a unique set of circumstances. So like, yeah, you could be like, well, you know, next life.
Right. I'll get it on the next time around the block, you know.
But, you know, at the same time, you're Jason now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm Alexis now, and this is how we are now. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's more of like a, I've always thought about it as a dream, you know,
life
where
is but a dream.
It really is.
Yeah.
Because when you wake up, you're your true self, but you were still in the dream too, you know? And so when you wake up, you remember all the stuff in the dreaming, but when you're dreaming, you don't necessarily remember. So that's kind of what I think about that. It also makes sense if you think about like why this would show up like across places is because we're the world functions in cycles. The universe functions in cycles. Sure. So why wouldn't souls have cycles too?
Right.
You know, it's like, it's a logical, I mean, like if you like, okay. I mean, like maybe it's a little oversimplified, but I mean, I don't know, like kind of feels like, yeah, that could be.
Well, Jason Fact 138 is, if I can forget, I will forget. You know, but let's talk a little bit about I'll just throw out the question. What are ghosts?
I think that's a word that people use to scare us.
Sure.
So like I feel like when people say ghosts, I would use the word spirit.
Okay. Yeah.
But they're like one in the same.
Okay.
And most of the time people are saying it, like, I think most people think of it only referring to like somebody who's been, excuse me, dead, you know, they're dead and they're just wandering around and they're stuck or something.
Yeah.
My experience is that the spirit's a little more complicated. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when people think that like a house is haunted, it might not actually be like a dead person hanging out there. It might actually be the house itself.
Yeah.
Because everything has a spiritual signature. And I tend to agree with Shintoism, where the longer that something has had emotional energy poured into it,
mm-hmm.
it brings it to life, just like the Velveteen Rabbit. It turns real.
Yeah.
So houses have a lot of emotional energy and they can last a long time.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense that you'd have houses that have like one room that feels a little weird, or one room that feels really good, or like, why does the cabinet keep on, you know, it's like you have Encanto, you know, the casita. And so like, I actually think it's kind of strange that we don't have more of that. Maybe in places where the houses are older, it's more typical, but
or something traumatic or really something happens within a place. I sometime, one of my bucket lists is sometime, I was a history major in college. That's where I got my little piece of paper with the signature. I want to go to Gettysburg, man. Of such a intense where a lot of bad stuff happened. You know, I want to go there. I want to, you know, some people just want to see the sights. Man, I want the experience. I want the feel of it too. What, you know, because all we know is, you know, history books and or interviews with people who were there, yada yada yada. I mean, but I'm the type of guy that, man, I want to go there and I want to feel something, because to me that broadens my experience, and it's not just words written down on a page, the what, when, where, you know.
Yeah.
I'm more of a why guy.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, like my family's from Pennsylvania.
Mm.
So we had people there, and I've been to Gettysburg, and it feels, I mean, to me, it feels a little sad. It feels sad. I'm going to say a little is not, it feels sad there. There's like an ache, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Different places, I, you know, feel differently. Like, I have been to the Tower of London, which
Oh,
this was before I had like really opened things up. I was 14 and I couldn't be in there. I started to retch. I thought I was going to throw up. I was dizzy. I had to leave because the energy there was so awful. It was awful.
Oh, yeah.
I had a similar experience in a torture house in Budapest. It was used by the Arrow Cross and the communists. And I went into the basement there. And I was like, nope, gotta leave, gotta
Woo, getting late, you
leave.
gotta go, you
Oh
know.
no. However, on the other hand, there's other places that feel fantastic, like Tintern Abbey is absolutely gorgeous. It's like the structure is it's just the walls and it's open. And so you're walking on the grounds and you can feel the peace of the monks that were there. And then it just feels like it's connected, earth and heaven together. And it just feels beautiful, peaceful, calm. You feel those things. Or like this is a little closer to home, and this could be anywhere. And this is one of the things that I tell all my baby psychic clients is do not go in an antique shop ever. Never go into an antique shop because you've got a whole lot of heavy energy in all these objects and they aren't clean. It's not like a museum. A museum can be great because they take care of the objects. The objects are maintained. There's love put into them. So even if an object has a bloody history, there's a kind of peace about it, and you can kind of separate that energy. Like you can look into it as a clairvoyant. I can look into it, but it doesn't feel painful. It doesn't make me nauseous or anything. If I walk into an antique shop, it's like I'm in a crowded room and there's like things like coming at me, and it's just, oh, I could be sick for days in a really crowded from a really crowded antique shop.
No, so listen up, toddlers. Do not go antiquing.
Don't.
I know I just pissed off a bunch of people. Like, I'm an antiquer. How dare
Go,
you?
well, an estate sale should be fine because it's like one family.
What if
You
it's
know,
an
and
heirloom, though? Because a lot of people,
it,
like, I have, stuff from my grandparents, my great grandparents.
but it's still your family. It's still your family. And so there's a continuity of energy there. It's like, the spiritual signatures are strong and the connection between bodies is strong. So even if it's an heirloom, it won't be like people shouting across each other, as opposed to being in a room where you have like, I don't know, hundreds of different people represented like in a space of like 3 square feet, and you're just like, it's crazy.
I do my show in here in Oregon,
Okay.
and me one of seminary Mount Angel up there, because it's also a monastery. That was probably the one place in my life where it was totally nice and peaceful. And you felt like you wanted to go back there simply because you yearn for that feeling, right? Because as
Yeah.
we walk through life and we do our own stuff, I mean, it's most of it may not negative, but it's not positive,
Yeah.
So yeah, so if anyone's in Oregon, go there. Do you believe that everything, and I'm talking, I know this is going to be, for some people, it's going to be kind of a deep in the weeds question, but to me at least, let me explain, I guess, best if I explain it first. To me, I think everything is energy and frequency, vibration. And, when you pass away, you're on your corporeal body, it's just transferring a transference of energy into a different sort of frequency and, is that closer to being true, or is it a little different?
I mean, I think, yeah, sure. Like,
Yeah.
you know, if so, how can I? So I'll give you an example of what when you were saying that, I immediately thought of my grandmother. And she was always very, this is like that idea of like, you know, high, you know, the vibrations or frequency. She
Sure.
was always like kind of a jolly person, you know, she was quick to laugh. I kind of have a similar thing with that. But when she was 95 when she passed, and so she lived a full life. You know, she had no regrets. Everything, all the things, all the loose tie, there were no loose ends. Everything was tied up. And so when she was in, when she got to spirit, she was the most joyful spirit I have ever encountered. She was like, "This is great.
You're
This is
right.
so much fun, Alexis." And I was like, you know, I kind of miss your corporeal form, but I get it. Like,
Yeah.
and she's just like, you know, she's just like, you know, it was like she was like dancing and have, I mean, she was just having a blast.
Yeah.
And I just think that that was very clearly a reflection of who she was in life, you know,
Yeah.
like what we were talking about earlier, you know, the choices, your personality, all those things, they translate over. It's still, you know, it's still you. When you pass over, it's just a different form. You don't have a body,
Yeah.
but you still have your soul.
Right. What is a day in the life of Alexis? Just on a day-to-day basis, you wake up and everything. I mean, is it con when the first time you open your eyes, is it her or I'm always interested. Hey, Alexis, what is it like, man?
Well, you know, I get that question a lot, actually, like, what's it like being psychic and like moving through life? And honestly, when my abilities like first kind of like blew up, I was just like overwhelmed. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. If you don't have control, you have an extra set of senses. And if you don't have control, you don't know how to turn them off. And so, and also, you it's like you just lit a flare in spirit, and so everybody can see you and you can see them and they want to talk and
I bet.
so they're going to start coming to you. And usually it's like the I mean it's usually it tends to be more people that would have some kind of connection to you, or beings that would have some kind of connection to you that would kind of accost you first, if you want to use that word. But once you have control, it's a whole other ball game. And this is actually where I have things really on lock. I have really solid boundaries in spirit. And
Yeah,
it, to the point.
let's talk about those boundaries. How does it, like if someone has these abilities, how do they set these boundaries? How do they learn how to set these boundaries?
Well, I mean, I like with spirit, something that I think people don't realize is that spirit obeys your rules of engagement. So you call the shots, but you have to decide what those are going to be. So you like from the very beginning, you can say, I only want to have prophetic dreams. That's it. That's all. Don't show up at any other time. Don't talk to me during the day.
No DMV.
I want to drink my coffee in peace, okay? Like that, and that's totally fine. You know, if that's what you need to do, you can do that. And it's very simple. You can like I just set I literally when I decided what I wanted, you know, as I decide I'm making adjustments to my rules or whatever, I'll just say it out loud. I'll be like, "You know what, guys? I'm over this. We're gonna do it this way from now on." And then that's it. That's how it is from thereafter. And you trust that that's what it's going to be because that's how it's done. So it's, yeah, like I do have some energetic, I'm going to use the word wards. You could say energetic fencing around my home, around my the bedrooms, my kids' bedrooms, around myself, because for reasons. But I also have like a spiritual goon squad that acts
Awesome.
as a screen for me, because there'd be beings coming and sometimes they're not so nice. And so like, yeah, I have the fencing there, but if something gets a little too close, or if person who is deceased gets a little too clingy or something, they step in and they're like, hey, back off.
Alexis, I'm going to tell you right now, I want a goon squad. I do.
Everybody should have a girl.
Right. I'm going to ask it for Christmas. I'm going to ask the wife and say, hey, Melissa, can I have a goon squad? And she'll give me
Yeah, she'll give me that
the look.
look.
Yeah. So let's talk now with Alexis. Do you see clients? Do you have classes?
Yes,
Well,
so I do workshops periodically, but mostly I do one-on-one work at this point. I have a range of services. So I do readings, which, as we talked about earlier, those, I do use cards sometimes for people who want a more direct, less risky reading. But because the clairvoyant ones can be a gamble, you never know what's going to happen. But my most popular readings are probably, it's a bundle where you do the heart center vision and then a message from spirit, which is just whoever wants to show up from spirit and gives you the message that you most need. And those are like the biggest gamble. However, they can also be incredibly rewarding.
the most
So those are
cathartic.
the kinds of, yeah, those are the kinds of readings that I tend to do. And then I also do coaching, a lot of times for baby psychics, as I said. And I do things like a one-off session. Sometimes somebody needs like an emergency, but I also do like long-term mentorships for them as well.
Very cool. Very cool. When you talk about the big baby stuff, I always think, sit down and get, grape juice and a story time, like graham crackers and grape juice.
Well, I mean, there's hand holding. You need someone to hold your hand, because that is scary. It can be scary and overwhelming. So,
How do people get a hold of you if they want to have the one-on-one reading or
yeah.
whatever,
You can visit my website, which is alexisdonkin.com. I'm also on Instagram, at alexis.donkin. And I'm on Facebook. I mean, like I'm on a lot of places, but probably the best is to go to just my website, and then you can reach out, find all the answers to your questions about booking, and there's direct links all over there for you.
Gotcha.
So
Give the URL again.
alexisdonkin.com. And
Excellent.
if you're just starting out and you're like, I don't know what I need or what I want, honestly, the best way to do it is like one of my Ask a Psychic sessions. It's just 20 minutes. It's $30. It's really reasonable. And it's good for one question. And we'll just
Gotcha.
talk, and you will leave that and you'll be like, oh, thank God.
Right. See, I'm from a radio background, so when I ask you to do it twice, I mean, someone can listen to the podcast. All you do is rewind it, but I'm always, hey, Anyway, thing is I still have a billion questions. I mean, I look down my cheat sheet here. I'm like, oh man, I didn't get to this or crap, so if you don't mind, sometime in the future, I'd love to have Alexis Donkin back on so we can
I'd love to come back. This was a great time.
Yeah, oh yeah, me too. I my interview style is I just want people to, you know, when they look in on it, I want them to feel like they're just sitting around in a circle just hanging out and yakking. Because I don't want to, Alexis Duncan, please tell me about yourself. You know, don't want to do that. But it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Keep doing what you're doing. And remember, if you're going to take anything out of this, folks, if you're going to take anything out of this episode, I want you to take, thou shalt not be a douchebag.
100%.
And go your own way in peace, you know? Totally. Right. All right, Alexis, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Alexis. Folks, again, we got our live streaming event, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, Halloween night. You can catch it all on YouTube Live. Folks, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, our first live streaming event, special guests, all sorts of hoopla, merriment, and monkey shines. Do not miss it. I guarantee you it is going to be super fantabulous. That's right. It's Midnight Alchemy's word of the episode, super fantabulous. All right. You can always voicemail us if you are so inclined. You can give us guest ideas, comments, jokes. Who cares? You can call us at 971-205-2464. Again, 971-205-2464. Voicemails are always welcome. And you can always email us at midnightalchemyshow@gmail.com. midnightalchemyshow@gmail.com. All right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and small domesticated animals, it is time for me to ride off into the sunset. Stay tuned. Again, live streaming event, Halloween night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, our first inaugural, our maiden voyage live streaming event. All right, folks, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Arrivederci.